This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As America marks its 250th anniversary, we're looking back at 2.5 centuries of rebellion and liberty through the eyes of the heroes who defended it.
The whole thing about this country is freedom. If we're not careful, we could lose that.
On Medal of Honor, Stories of Courage, we bring you the defining moments of valor that went above and beyond the call of duty. Listen to Medal of Honor on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Thursday. Remember, tomorrow's Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Get your questions emailed in now to jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We'll finish up our talk here in a couple minutes about this Trump-Iran speech. What was the goal of the whole thing? Then we'll do some emails, other things tonight. As I mentioned last hour, 20 minutes, address the nation. Why give it? He's selling. But he's selling something different to everybody. If you're somebody who loves it, I love the Iran war, more, kill them all, let God sort them, that kind of a thing. Totally understandable with a scumbag regime like that. He was selling, hey, we're annihilate them. They don't even have a navy anymore. Great work. What if you're against it? What if you think this is dumb? Why is he doing this? I don't like it. This is intervention. The prices are going up. What if you're one of those people? Well, he attempted to give those people something too, to sell them on something too. I played a little bit of this earlier. I'll let him finish. Here was Trump. If you're an Iran skeptic, and you probably put me in that camp, but just we need to come home now. But if you're an Iran skeptic, he was trying to tell you, don't get too mad. Soon, we're almost done.
We are on track to complete all of America's military objectives shortly, very shortly. We're going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages where they belong. In the meantime, discussions are ongoing. Regime change was not our goal. We never said regime change, but regime change has occurred because of all of their original leaders' death. They're all dead. Yet if during this period of time no deal is made, we have our eyes on key targets. If there is no deal, we are going to hit each and every one of their electric generating plants very hard and probably simultaneously. We have not hit their oil, even though that's the easiest target of all, because it would not give them even a small chance of survival or rebuilding. But we could hit it, and it would be gone, and there's not a thing they could do about it.
Hey, we're almost done, but if you don't make a deal, we're going to wipe out a bunch of stuff. We nuked a bridge today over there in Iran. Headline, oil prices may hit $200 a barrel. Headline, the S&P erases $830 billion as the U.S. markets open. That happened right when the markets opened. They recovered, so don't freak out. Don't check your 401k, but when the markets open, that tells you how the market saw things. Now, what's Donald Trump saying? We're almost done. He's threatening the worst possible outcome to the Iranian regime. He's selling them something, too. Hey, I can make this hurt worse. You're hurting now? You haven't seen pain yet. He's trying to force them with these threats. He's trying to force them to a negotiating table. He's selling them something too. One final thing he was selling. Europe. You see, as I have said time and time and time and time and time again, a lesson many leaders in history have learned. It's easy to start a war. It is difficult to stop one. It is easy to start a fight with your husband, with your wife. No problem. You know the buttons to push. Will not be a difficult task. Turning that temperature down, living at peace, not totally up to you. Once you have started it, now there are other entities involved. The Strait of Hormuz. Here's a headline. Grain, steel, and fertilizer blocked by the Hormuz closure. You know, little things like that. Grain, steel, and fertilizer. The Strait of Hormuz is closed. Why is it closed, though? When Iran doesn't have a navy, why is it closed? Here's why it's closed. If you have a billion-dollar ship with $1 billion in goods on that ship, and you want to send that ship through the Strait of Hormuz, you have to give that ship insurance in the exact same way, kind of different, but really similar, that you have car insurance. You have to have car insurance, right? Well, you have to have insurance on that ship, not just for bombs and mines and drones, but the hurricane, whatever. It needs to be insured. Insurance companies do not want to provide insurance for a ship they think might be subject to an Iranian drone attack or a mine. The mines don't even have to be there necessarily. The drones don't even have to be flying necessarily. If the insurance company is worried they might fly or could possibly do it, they say, no insurance for you. And guess what? If the insurance company says no insurance for you, that ship ain't leaving the harbor. That's the reality of life. We're there. Iran's one card to play, because they can never stand up to us militarily. The only card they had to play was, if we have to call it something, economic terrorism, I guess. Their card to play was the Strait of Hormuz. That's always been their card to play. Go ahead and attack us. Go ahead. Send your navy. Send whatever. We'll close the strait. We'll see how ambitious you are for war when the stock market tanks and oil hits $200 a barrel. They've known that's their greatest weapon, and they have used that greatest weapon. How do we open it now? Well, Trump, obviously by now, understands he needs to wrap it up and come home. He knows that. But if we leave right now, let's say he did that right now, he says to everybody, we're done, pack it up, pack it in. Get on the ships. We're gone. The strait is still closed. The strait is closed because of what we did. We can't dance around that. The strait was open. Then we attacked Iran, and now the strait's closed. Trump has said publicly in social media posts, hey, Europe, you're the one who needs the strait. You're the one who needs all the stuff flowing through there. We don't need the stuff. I suggest you get your navy down here and open up the strait. Last night, again, selling Europe on something too. Here he was.
So to those countries that can't get fuel, many of which refuse to get involved in the decapitation of Iran, we had to do it ourselves. I have a suggestion. Number one, buy oil from the United States of America. We have plenty. We have so much. And number two, build up some delayed courage. Should have done it before. Should have done it with us, as we asked. Go to the strait and just take it, protect it, use it for yourselves. Iran has been essentially decimated. The hard part is done, so it should be easy.
He's trying to build for himself the off-ramp, and he's letting Europe know, you weren't there for us. We've always been there for you. I'm going to leave here, and if you don't like it that the strait is closed, then you come down here and you open up the strait. He's trying. You know how I keep saying off-ramp, off-ramp, off-ramp? He needs an off-ramp. He wants an off-ramp. He knows he has to get an off-ramp. The Strait of Hormuz is a critical part of the building of that off-ramp. If it's not opened, then he needs someone else to worry about it so we can leave. Headline, Trump says Iranian president requested a ceasefire, but the U.S. won't consider it until the Hormuz Strait is open. Quote, until then, we are blasting. Donald Trump is saying, your bridges, your whatever, I will blow them to smithereens until you stop terrorizing the Strait. Who's going to win in these negotiations? How's this going to work? I don't know. But it was a 20-minute sell job. He was selling. Selling to the pro-Iran, to pro-war people, selling to the anti-war people, selling to Europe, selling to the stock market, selling to Iran. He had 20 minutes to address the planet, and that's what he attempted to do. How'd it go? Well, Lindsey Graham said this.
Take it. He's going to blow up everything they got. So well right, done, so Mr. President. Well done to our military. I'm very happy tonight.
The Lindsey Graham types loved it. The people who think it's a mistake, I haven't seen a single one of those people who liked it. So the sell job landed on Lindsey Graham types. The sell job didn't land on the skeptic types. Remember that conversation we had about messaging? Messaging matters a lot, a lot. We'll finish that up and we'll do some emails next.
Truth, attitude, Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Thursday. Excited to be done talking about this right now, but we had to address it when the president addresses the nation. Now, we had talked last hour about messaging. Messaging matters a lot. With your attorney general, with your president, with your head football coach, messaging matters a lot. It's part of life. It is just part of life. It matters. Donald Trump is really, really good at a lot of things politically. His messaging is absolutely awful, and it always has been. Why is that? It's because of his background. His background is this brash promoter type. And because Donald Trump is used to, for 70 years, he has lived his life of saying whatever he feels at the moment. But in politics, you can like the honesty. But if that's what you do, you're going to hurt yourself sometimes. For instance, American workers right now, American workers are sick and tired of American jobs going to foreigners, illegal foreigners and legal foreigners. They don't want to hear about any more H-1Bs. They don't want to hear about... Americans are sick and tired of that. Now, on the other hand, gigantic businesses, big businesses love to hire foreigners because they can pay them less. It's a simple bottom line thing. Why would I pay this American $60,000 a year? I'll go grab some guy from India and pay him $40,000 a year and work him like a slave. Big businesses love that. Who is around Donald Trump now, especially after Charlie Kirk was assassinated? The people around Donald Trump are universally, without exception, they're big business people. It's Scott Bessent, it's Steve Witkoff, it's all these big business people. What are they telling him? As you scream out, stop the immigration, stop the immigration. They are the ones with his ear, and they're telling him, well, you can't do that, man. Hey, man, I need 10,000 more Indians. Enough of that. Hey, Mr. President, I don't even have Americans who I can hire. They don't even have the talent. But Donald Trump walks out of that meeting with Steve Witkoff when he finds out we don't have the talent, and he sits down with Laura Ingraham on Fox News, and he said this.
It's important that we keep this conflict in perspective.
That's totally the wrong cut. This cut right here.
H-1B visa thing will not be a big priority for your administration, because if you want to raise wages for American workers, you can't flood the country with tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands
agree,
of foreign
but
workers.
You also do have to bring in talent. When
well, we
a
have
country
plenty of talented people
no,
here.
You don't. No, you don't.
We don't have talented
being,
people
no,
here.
No, you don't have certain talents, and people have to learn. You can't take people off an unemployment line and say, I'm going to put you into a factory where we're going to make missiles.
Is Donald Trump a bad guy? Absolutely not. Is he anti-American? Nope. One of the most pro-American presidents I've had in my lifetime. That's terrible messaging. As a politician, if you put that on camera, you are going to pay a political penalty for that. And he did. That reverberated around the country. There's a reason he repeated it again the next day and has not mentioned it one time since. That was terrible messaging. Terrible. Messaging matters. Donald Trump is aware that the public is not a big fan of Iran. I am sure that Trump and his people put this into Trump's speech last night because they thought it would effectively calm those people down, or I guess I should say shame the people who are skeptical. This did not deliver. This was a bad idea.
It's important that we keep this conflict in perspective. American involvement in World War I lasted 1 year, 7 months, and 5 days. World War II lasted for 3 years, 8 months, and 25 days. The Korean War lasted for 3 years, 1 month, and 2 days. The Vietnam War lasted for 19 years, 5 months, and 29 days. Iraq went on for 8 years, 8 months, and 28 days. We are in this military operation, so powerful, so brilliant, against one of the most powerful countries for 32 days. And the country has been eviscerated.
When people are angry about it, people are concerned about things at home, gas prices and affordability, it's not great messaging to say, hey, it's not as long as World War II. That's bad messaging. Terrible messaging. When he said it, I went, oh. My son, my oldest son, my 17-year-old James, I told you I watched this speech with James. He's my political kid. When he said it, James, I mean, you know what he did? He laughed. Ah! When he dropped the, well, Vietnam. Ah! It was a, what? It. Whoever put that in there, whether that was Trump himself or someone else, go sit in the corner for 10 minutes. That was, at least it's not as long as Vietnam. Ha! Eh. It's not great. Let's not do that one again. Let's put that one in the same trash bin where we put Americans don't have the talent. That's the trash bin where we can put that. We'll never take it back out again. Let's do that one. Now, let's move on. Let's do some emails before we talk about, well, non-citizens being born in the United States of America. Since we're apparently going to be stuck with birthright citizenship forever in this freaking country, we'll get to that. But I want to talk. I want to do some emails, find out what you care about next. Before we do that, let's do this. Do you have an afternoon cup of coffee? When your day is finally done, are you dying to get in the couch, in your recliner, put your pajamas on? Or when you get home from work, school, when you're done cooking dinner for the kids, are you still full of pep? Maybe you think that full of pep at the end of the day thing was just for younger you. Nope. Chalk will give that back to you. Natural herbal supplements are your path back to that. Chalk has the best natural herbal supplements I have ever tried in my life. Maybe you don't even want to start with a male vitality stack or female vitality stack. Fine. Why don't you start with a subscription to Chalk Lit Powder and start your day with a glass of that? Put it in milk or a smoothie every morning. Vitamins, minerals. You're about to feel so different and so much better. Better in every possible way. C-H-O-Q. Chalk.com. Promo code Jesse. Chalk.com. Promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
About something about a comedic tone.
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
2026 marks the 250th anniversary of America. The soul of this country is found in the stories of those who defended it. I'm J.R. Martinez, a U.S. Army veteran. I know that true valor isn't just a word. It's a choice made in a split second. That's why I'm honored to bring you a brand new season of Medal of Honor, Stories of Courage from Pushkin Industries and iHeart Podcast. You'll fly into the heart of a rescue mission with Air Force pilot James Fleming in Vietnam.
I'm going to put you out in the middle of hell. If you have to come home, I'll bring you home. That's my duty. It's my honor.
We'll also travel back to 1926 to witness Richard Byrd's historic flight over the North Pole. These are more than just stories of combat. They are testaments to leadership, community, and the human spirit. Listen to Medal of Honor on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Thursday. Tomorrow's Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, and you can get your questions emailed in now to jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Hey, big-handed ninja spy. Just curious how you and the family plan on celebrating Easter. I still do Easter baskets and candy for the kids. I also insist on going to church to celebrate the resurrection of Christ. This holiday may be even more important than Christmas, in my opinion. Curious your feelings on the matter. Yeah, it's the most important day ever, for one. Two, we will... First of all, we're going to church the day before. Explanation for that is, no, Chris, it's not synagogue. We're going the day before because our church, like most churches, gets super packed on Easter, so they actually roll in a couple services on Saturday. They encourage you. They basically ask, hey, if you could go on Saturday, we would appreciate it, because they know on Sunday so many people are going to show up that don't normally show up. The place is going to be overflowing. We're doing it because they're asking. So on Saturday, we're going to celebrate Resurrection Day. On Saturday. On Sunday. I screwed up last night, okay? I do this on occasion. My boys are 15 and 17. They're teenage boys. I get home from work that night, last night, and Ob is in the kitchen, and I see a big bag of Easter eggs she's going to fill, clearly to do an Easter egg hunt for the boys. And I said, are those Easter eggs for an Easter egg hunt? And she said, yeah. And I burst out laughing. And she looks and she says, what? And I said, baby, don't you think they're a little old for an Easter egg hunt? What do you even put in an Easter egg for a 15-year-old? A Butterfinger? I mean, what do you put in there? Chris said cash. That's what it would have to be, right? You throw a five in there or something like that? I don't know. But that was the wrong thing to do at that particular time. I wouldn't recommend laughing. It took some time to let her know that it's actually a good thing. She said, so there'll be an Easter egg hunt at Casa de Kelly on Sunday. And other than that, I don't think we'll do much at all, because like I said, we're going to church on Saturday. What, Chris? Oh, that's a really good call, Chris. That's terrible, though. Chris said hide the eggs in the gutter so they get cleaned. Here's the problem. What if they miss one? And now the eggs are contributing to the clogging of the gutter. And I'm already on a bit of bad footing around the house, because I almost burnt the house down the other night. I have, you know, my smoker, pellet smoker, like every pitmaster has. I have my pellet smoker. Well, I asked one time, I think it was on the air, I asked, what's the best way to clean it? Like, how in depth should you go to clean out the pellet smoker? And I got scolded by the actual pit masters. There are so many. Maybe you're one of these people that said, clean it? You never freaking clean it. You never clean it. And the only feedback I got beyond that was, when you're done smoking something, whatever it is, a brisket or something like that, just crank up the heat for 10 minutes and cook off, you know, the excess and turn it off and let it go. Well, the last time I made, oh, Chris, this is bad, dude. The last time I had made something, it was for a neighborhood party, and I had bought, I didn't make them at home, I'm sorry, I didn't have time. I had bought these kind of stuffed jalapenos from the local meat shop where they take all this cheese and meat and they stuff it in a jalapeno and wrap it in bacon and do that. I bought these and I threw them on the smoker to take over to the neighbor's house. Throw them on the smoker, it's time to go to the neighbor's, pull them off the smoker. Well, they had burst all over the smoker. So there's cheesy, meaty guts of a jalapeno popper basically all over the smoker. I never went back and cleaned it. I'm sitting out back the other night watching a documentary. No, I was watching baseball. Sitting out back. Nobody was out there. So I thought, well, now would be a good time to crank up the smoker and burn off some of that excess that I had not burnt off before. I think there was some extra grease in there or something because flames started pouring out the back of the thing. And you know, Chris, the side of it where there the grease drips out, like the bottom part where the grease drips out, there were actually, I mean, it was like a window into hell. There was just flames like shooting out of that part of it. And I turned, why, Chris? I don't know. Apparently, how did I stop it? I just turned it off, sat there for a while and prayed. That's all. I went inside. I grabbed the fire extinguisher just in case the house went up in flames. Ob did smell the smoke, so I had to talk about that, which wasn't a great talk. Either way, I just kind of waited it out. See, that's my firefighting technique, Chris, is I just let it burn, really. I let it burn. Let it work itself out, and everything will be fine. I highly recommend it. Hey, Jesse, is it me or did Trump contradict the administration's narrative regarding Iran's nuclear capabilities? They've been saying that Iran could have upped the enrichment of the uranium to weapons grade within 10 days. But last night, Trump said it would take months for them to get their nuclear dust due to the Operation Midnight Hammer. What says the Oracle? So as I can say his name. His name is Aaron. Yeah, look, the they were about to get nuclear weapons thing was always going to be a difficult sell to the American public, regardless of whether or not it was true. And it was always going to be a difficult sell for two different reasons. One of them being what you just laid out. We had that really cool operation, Operation Midnight Hammer, where we flew our bombers from Iowa all across the globe, and then we took out all their underground nuclear sites, and everyone remembers it, and everyone cheered for it, and it was sold to us then as Iran's nuclear stuff, toast. It's all buried under a mountain. We wiped it out. Then we woke up one day, and Trump said, well, we have no choice. We got to go bomb Iran. They're about to get a nuclear weapon. Wait, what? So that was always going to be a tough part of the sell. The other tough part of the sell, and this part's not Trump's fault, but you got to deal with the complex people already have. The other tough part of the sell is we've been warned about Iran getting nuclear weapons for 20 years. 20 years. People have been getting up on camera and saying, well, Iran's about to have a nuke. Iran's about to have a nuke. Any day, 20 years. Somebody has, you know what? I may dig it up during the break here. Somebody, it wasn't us, put together a montage of that. 20 years of people warning that Iran's about to have a nuke. Well, they can't all have been telling the truth. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been 20 years. So that part was always the tougher sell. I don't know that it was going to be possible to sell an Iran war to independence. I don't know that that's a possible task. I personally, but I'm different. I'm like you. I always thought the best sell on the whole thing was they tried to kill Trump. Iran sent operatives over here to assassinate Trump. That is worthy of killing the Ayatollah. In my opinion, you wanted to hurt Iran? We should have sent our stuff over there and just bombed the Ayatollah and turned around and came back home and said, that's what happens when you try to kill Donald Trump. If you try to kill an American, this is what we'll do. We'll come over there and kill you. That's what you get. That's what I would have liked to have seen. But it's not where we are. We'll continue on some more of these next.
You're listening to The Oracle.
You're going to love this one. It's a scream, baby.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is The Jesse Kelly Show on an amazing, amazing Thursday. If you miss any part of the show, you can download it. iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Hey, Jesse. So it's pretty clear what the strategy of the Democrat Party is, which is to replace American voters with their cheap date immigrant voters. My question is, has this been their strategy for many decades and they haven't been able to implement it for whatever reason? Or is this something new? It's old and it's new. Let me explain. 1960s, I would say roughly. Democrats, you can look up the Hart-Keller Act and whatnot. Democrats figured, hey, immigrants are going to help us win elections. Okay, so that's the primer. That's the beginning of it. However, a 1960s Democrat, if your dad was a Democrat or grandpa was a Democrat, was probably a patriot. Now, they may have had wildly different views from you on taxes or spending or unions or things like that, but that 1960s, 1970s Democrat, they loved the United States of America. They flew an American flag. On the 4th of July, it was red, white, and blue. America's the greatest country on earth. I'm not saying they would align with you on views. I'm not saying that at all because there were always differences in the party. But in their heart, in their soul, that Democrat loved the country. So what's that mean? Well, all right, bringing in 5 million people from Mexico, if I'm a 1970s Democrat. Hey, let's do that. It'll help us. We'll keep a couple extra congressional seats. No big deal. And let's not take it too far here. Let's make sure we're monitoring everything. We don't want to ruin, you know, the safety of our cities or something like that. Hold on. We still have to care about the country here, but we'll bring some in. We'll win some elections. That'll be good to go. Patriotism for an older Democrat always held back how evil they would go. Fast forward to today, as we've discussed, we could pull out that poll again and show you, but there's no need to do so. The modern Democrat, not just elected official, the Democrat voter hates the United States of America. They believe the United States of America is the height of all evil. The United States of America, specifically Christian white men, are inherently evil. It's born into them. America deserves to be punished because this country sucks and white men suck and Christianity sucks. These are not radical views in the Democrat Party today. That is mainstream Democrat thought. Well, once you get there, well, why don't we bring in a bunch more rapists? But they're going to rape Americans. I don't care. I hate Americans. But that's a gang from Venezuela. They kill and torture people. I don't care. America deserves that. America sucks. The difference between now and what it used to be is love of country. I come back to that over and over and over and over and over again. It wasn't just that Biden opened up the border. Remember that. They created an app so you could schedule your illegal invasion into the country. They were proactive. Your taxpayer money was used to fly foreigners into the country as fast as they could possibly get them here. They moved with a speed that looked like desperation. Desperate to bring in as many as humanly possible. Countries like Venezuela, who was obviously hostile back then, they used that opportunity to unload prison gangs. Remember Trinidad and Aragua? They used that opportunity to unload entire criminal gangs into America. Democrats knew it, and Democrats did it anyway. The difference between how it was and how it is patriotism. If your father, your grandfather, was a Democrat back in 1965, he believed in higher taxes for rich people. He believed strongly in unions, things like that. You would have had argument, economic arguments. And on the 4th of July, you would have been standing side by side singing God Bless America. And he would have had tears in his eyes the same way you would have had tears in his eyes. Now he's going to wipe his butt with the American flag before he lights it on fire. Love of country is the essential element for a country. Everything else. Yeah, it's again, hate to sound like a Beatles song because the Beatles were overrated. Hey, I hate to sound like a Beatles song, but love is all you need. It may not be all you need for a country, but man, you can get through a lot if you have it. If everybody in your town loves your town, they love it. They feel blessed to be here. Then your town, it may hit hard times. Hurricane, job loss, factory closes down. God only knows what tragedies will come. But that love of that town will sustain it and keep it going. If people hate it, if people think it sucks, it's evil, it's horrible. I don't care how many factories open, how much tax money's coming in. We got a new Chick-fil-A. Your town will fail and it will crumble. Love of country is the essential element for a country, which is why I have said over and over again, one of the frustrating things is to save America long term, we have to have something done that is outside of your control or my control. We have to have a reformed Democrat Party. You and I, we can control the GOP, and we should. We should get more involved, and we should make sure the GOP becomes actually anti-communist with testosterone. That's important. You can't control the Democrat Party, and neither can I. Today, from top to bottom, Democrats hate the United States of America. The average Democrat voter hates the United States of America. The Democrat city councilman hates the United States of America. Congressman, senator, candidate for president. They either hate it or they are so aware that their base hates it, they have to pretend to hate it. No matter what, the results are the same. How in the world can you properly serve a country, lead a country, represent a country or a town or a state if you hate it? Well, you can't. It'll burn. It doesn't work. It's what we have to have. Long term, we have to have it. All we can do is pray about it, right? Along those lines, what a story from CNN. I didn't think I'd ever say those words. Hang on.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As America marks its 250th anniversary, we're looking back at 2.5 centuries of rebellion and liberty through the eyes of the heroes who defended it.
The whole thing about this country is freedom. If we're not careful, we could lose that.
On Medal of Honor, Stories of Courage, we bring you the defining moments of valor that went above and beyond the call of duty. Listen to Medal of Honor on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.